You know, I went $81,000 into debt as a young officer. $21,000 of that was in one car stereo system. And I ended up finding the Dave Ramsey program and used his debt snowball to pay off all $80,000 in about 24 months by working 1,000 hours of overtime. There is no cookie cutter approach when it comes to money. Everybody's got a different situation. And you take someone that got handed two or three times more than they've ever made, and what do you expect them to do but go out and buy the big trucks and the guns and the rifles and, you know, do stupid stuff with money? And that's all a budget is. It's doing your ops plan before the month begins. It's debriefing throughout the month, and it's doing a formal after action at the end of the month to make sure that everything goes according to plan.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB. I am David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Nick Darty of FinancialCop.com about financial wellness for first responders. Don't forget to like and subscribe on our YouTube channel. It's Responder Resilience. We're also on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV. We're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We will be right back to speak with Nick after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB.
Today we're joined by Nick Darty of FinancialCop.com. Financial Cop is the largest financial wellness training group in the country taught by first responders for first responders. They've taught over 30,000 first responders from over 3,000 agencies nationally. And in addition, they operate one of the largest first responder-owned, fiduciary-only financial advisory firms. Nick, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you guys today.
It's great to have you.
Yep. So standard in the financial world, as you know, you hear the people on the commercials and all the fast reading. I don't read fast, but I do have a little quick disclaimer, if you don't mind me getting out of the way real quick.
Yeah, wait on us.
So discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your financial or investment professional before making important investment decisions. Advisory services offered through Retirement Plan Advisors, LLC, a federally registered investment advisor. RPA and Financial Cop are not affiliated. See, I told you I don't read as fast as they do on the commercials.
All right, and now take a deep breath.
I always joke in my class. I'm like, thank you, SEC. That's what one of the things I got to get out of the way.
Luckily, our population gets it, right?
Yep.
So talk to us about what a financial planner actually does for a first responder.
Well, you know, financial planners can do all kinds of things. And, you know, obviously there's all kinds of different financial advisors. And in the class we teach in person, one of my favorite sections is a section called How to Interrogate Financial Planners. Because the reality is, as cops and firefighters and EMS, we don't trust them. Why? Because they're not cops, firefighters, and EMS. And in our world, we don't get trust because we don't really understand what those financial advisors are doing, and more importantly, how they're being compensated. And so a financial advisor can do anything from basic financial planning to budget help to investment advice to helping understand your pension. I mean, a financial advisor is just it's a gamut. It can be a very, very large swath of what you want it to be from a financial relationship.
And, you know, you reminded me as you're speaking of back in the firehouse days, a lot of advice was being shared by, you know, from one firefighter to the next, right? Oh, you should get into this 457, or you should max out your 401k or whatever. But it seems like we need somebody who's a little further along, a little more knowledgeable. So in your world, why is it so important to talk about financial wellness?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the firehouse, and I mean, we have it at the PD too. I mean, I call them hallway gangsters. you know, people that think they know a lot about finances that may or may not. I was a hallway gangster. I mean, I learned about money because I did a bunch of stupid stuff with money, which qualified me as a rookie. You know, I went $81,000 into debt as a young officer. $21,000 of that was in one car stereo system. Yes, just one. And I ended up finding the Dave Ramsey program and used his debt snowball to pay off all $80,000 in about 24 months by working 1,000 hours of overtime. And so I became the nerd at my department, and I was that guy that everybody would come to. And I look back and I go, man, I was a hallway gangster. I was giving advice based on what I thought they should do based on my financial situation and not theirs. You know, there is no cookie cutter approach when it comes to money. Everybody's got a different situation. I mean, even in the Dave Ramsey world, some people love Dave Ramsey. Some people hate him. Some people love Susie Orman. Some people hate her. You know, it's, you got to find what works best for you. And that's really what a financial professional can help, is hone in on your specific situation. Every one of us have a lot of different puzzle pieces when it comes to money. And a good, true financial advisor is not going to just focus on the investments and the pension, but they're going to truly focus on what are all your puzzle pieces and how do we put them together? You may be doing great at retirement, but you may suck at budgeting. You may suck at your debt reduction plan. How do we take that and encompass it and put it together in a full plan like that?
And, you know, I had the pleasure of seeing you speak in Orlando at the First Responder Conference. And one of my favorite parts of your presentation is a very pictorial presentation of the car stereos that you you bought in the course of your car career. Why is it that first responders love to spend money on the toys without kind of thinking about, you know, the future? Like, what is that? Yeah. What is that about?
You know, I think a lot of it circles around. I spent a lot of time talking. Actually, I taught 125 chiefs in Texas because every chief, police chief in Texas has to go through our training. And I talked to them a lot about one of the things we don't understand about the issues with our young officers and firefighters is that for the most part, we are hiring these young guys and girls at 22, 23 years of age, right out of college or high school, basically, and we're turning them into lottery winners. Hmm. We're paying them more money than they've ever made in their entire life. We give them access to either unlimited overtime or the ability with the free time, especially on the fire side, because you got 96 hours off a lot, of being able to go do part-time jobs. And now let's throw a new marriage into the mix. Let's throw some kids into the mix. And you take someone that got handed two or three times more than they've ever made, and what do you expect them to do but go out and buy the big trucks and the guns and the rifles and, you know, do stupid stuff with money? I did it. I mean, I knew nothing about money. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family. My parents were great at providing for us. We didn't live a life of luxury, but at the same token, I know what it was like to you know, get by, basically. And then I got handed a crap load of money. And what did I do? I went, holy moly, look what I can buy. And, you know, on the law enforcement side, there's a really good book called Emotional Survivor for Law Enforcement. And it's written by Dr. Kevin Gilmartin. Hmm. And he does so much on the police side. It really applies to the fire side as well. But he talks in that book about the hypervigilant state. If you take your normal citizen out there, if you have a range of emotions like this, the normal citizen goes through this up and down little kind of range of emotions. What do we do as first responders? We get on duty, we get dispatched to the fire or the, you know, entrapment or the, shots fired call, and we go straight into an adrenaline rush. And then we get dismissed or we get done with that. And then we go to a burglar of a motor vehicle report, or we got to go push somebody out of the road. And, you know, that takes us down into that depressed mode. We do that all day long and we get off work and we're stuck in depressed mode. And how do we get out of that depressed mode? Well, what we should be doing is we should be, you know, taking care of our nutrition. We should be working out, finding hobbies, having friends outside of the first responder world. But what a lot of us do is we turn to things like addiction. We turn to, things that get us in trouble. And one of the things he talks about is retail therapy. You know, if I've had a really bad week and it's just been rough and I need a pick me up, you know, ain't nothing more than a pick me up than going and buying an $80,000 truck until those car payments start showing up. Mm-hmm. And so these are all things that psychologically we get ourselves trapped in. And it's been interesting kind of being the leader of the financial wellness world, because in Texas, we've taught, you know, a ton of the first responders. And when I teach across the country now, I get a lot of these chiefs go, man, I just didn't realize how much this all encompasses each other, and it all interwines with each other.
Right.
Today, we're joined by Daniel Sundahl. He's a published artist and writer and has three art books produced of his works. Articles of Daniel's work are featured in several international publications, and his art is recognized worldwide as he travels internationally speaking about his art and personal experiences with occupational stress injuries and post-traumatic growth. He's an advanced care paramedic, pre-hospital educator, a retired firefighter, photographer, and photo editor. Daniel, warm welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here.
You know, what's interesting, I'm listening to you. I think you're absolutely right. And some of the things that I see with clients too is that, well, I could be gone tomorrow. So today I want to drive that fast car to work. I want to enjoy myself because it could be all gone. And I feel like there's a lot of that mentality going on in our world and our culture with first responders.
I get that question a lot. I'm going to live for today because tomorrow's not guaranteed. And we're worse at that in first responder line because we see the death all the time.
That's right.
And my follow-up question is what happens if tomorrow isn't the last day? What do we do with there? And, I get criticized sometimes because I'm very, very hardcore when it comes to, my favorite quote from Dave Ramsey is, if you live like no one else later in life, you get to live like no one else. If you drive like no one else and sacrifice your car, you get to drive like nobody else. If we sacrifice a little bit for a couple of years, then guess what we get to do? We drive the nice cars. We go on the nice vacations and we do it, but we do it in moderation where we're doing nice things to live for today. Because you're right, tomorrow's not promised. But we're also preparing for if tomorrow is here as well so that we have the best of both worlds.
Right. In part of our search, we were trying to find financial planners who work with first responders. They're very hard to come by. I was wondering why you think that is, first of all, and then second of all, any advice for first responders listening who really can't find someone in their niche?
There's two reasons. The first reason is I would love to find more first responders that want to be financial advisors. I need one in about every state in this country. But at the same token, it's not normal to be a cop or a firefighter and be a nerd. I wasn't a nerd. I self-taught myself this and learned, holy crap, I really like this stuff. And so it's tough to find those. And then the other thing is when you do find some that do focus on first responders, unfortunately, there's a lot of different types of ways to do financial planning, some of which I just don't agree with. And that's one of the reasons why we became fiduciary only. We don't believe in a lot of the commission-based products and, whether it's an annuity or a permanent life, those kinds of things. And it's our opinion. I mean, everyone's got their opinion on that stuff. But unfortunately, we hear horror stories where people got screwed by certain things. And I always tell my first responders that we became fiduciary only for a couple of reasons. It's a blessing and a curse to work with first responders. It's a blessing because there's that icebreaker. We're first responder to first responder. It's a curse because they all know each other. And if you screw up, you might as well shut your doors because word travels quickly.
It's the same in our world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And so, touching on the topic about culturally competent first responder financial advisors, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, like, why is it so hard for us to trust, outside of our tribe?
Yeah, it's the inherent nature of first responders of we're taught in the academies not to really trust anybody in that sense. And, Bonnie, going back to one of your question with that, it's kind of a two part with both these questions combined is, how do you find that right person? Well, you don't just go with who your buddy told you to go with. This is a big decision. I always tell people to interview people. That's why we talk about how to interrogate financial planners. Ask them, are they a fiduciary? Are they suitability? Are they both? We tell our first responders when it comes to fees, you should slide a 4x6 postcard across the table and say, Mr. or Mrs. Financial Advisor, what are your fees? And by the way, if you get past the second line, I'm going to get up and leave. It should be that transparent. If they can't explain what you're paying that transparent wise, you're never going to trust them because you're never going to know what you're paying. If you have an existing financial advisor, you should be able to call that advisor right now and go, hey, what are the fees I've paid over the last 12 months? And I want that answer by 5 o'clock. If they start dancing, that report takes me 2 seconds to run. I can tell you, I know how much each client is paying me. Matter of fact, we provide that data on their annual reports of this is how much you've paid me over the last 12 months. I always tell people there's nothing wrong with making money, right? We're all doing something to make money. It's making sure that you understand what they're doing and how they're making money and so that it's not too exorbitant. Mm-hmm. Deal with that on the life insurance side. You know, a lot of life insurance policies, the ones that we don't agree with, come with very, very high commissions. And we tell people all the time, there's nothing wrong with getting paid a commission, but someone's trying to sell you a life insurance policy, tell them, Mr. or Mrs. Life Insurance Agent, what is the commission you're going to earn off of this over the next 10 years? And I want to know all of it. And if they won't put it in writing, then find somebody that will.
So Nikki touched on this earlier in terms of departments and agencies preparing, I guess, not only the rank and file, but you said you were doing a class with some chiefs, maybe, the whole state of Texas. Are we doing a good job and what can we be doing better with financial wellness education?
Yeah, in Texas, we're doing a phenomenal job. Granted, we've been teaching since 2012, so we have hit a lot. In Texas, all 1,200 chiefs go through it. In DFW, every new sergeant that goes to any of the leadership academies has to go through our class. When they promote to lieutenant and deputy chief, their state leadership, they go through our class. Outside of the state of Texas, we're starting to do better. And I've had the fortunate last year, we taught 130 classes in 15 states and, granted, a little tired, but this is a mission and this is what we're here to do is help our brothers and sisters with this. And so we're teaching just as much this year. And, we've got to recognize, one of the things I'm teaching the chiefs right now is on the police side, we are having a very, very big crisis when it comes to recruiting and retention. And we got cops retiring at 20 years instead of 25 and 30. We got nobody that wants to be a cop. I've been giving my West Coast first responders kudos because I don't know that we would have cops in Texas right now if it wasn't for the West Coast all coming to Texas to become cops. I don't know how they're doing it out there. But in one of the things we looked at is over 70% of their employers would be willing to talk to a financial professional unaffiliated with their department to help them with this. 60% of them would feel better if they had financial wellness resources. I'd have to pull up the stat again. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's something like, 48 or 49% of employees are anxious about their finances while 70 something percent of them don't do a monthly budget, which would fix the anxiety on the monthly finances. We've got to start to remember and correlate. Now, a lot of those that, a lot of chiefs don't even recognize it. I mean, if you think about it, one of the biggest things that stresses people out is money. And, whether it's debt, whether it's medical expenses, whether it's saving for retirement, but look at the saving for retirement. I mean, every single agency in the country, whether it's police, fire, EMRS, it doesn't matter. Every single one of them has a grumpy, somebody that can't stand being there. They hate the place and they do everything they can to bring everybody down. And the reality is a lot of the time they're grumpy because they can't afford to retire. Now, think about what that does from a morale standpoint to that shift. Right. It's all designed about because they can't retire. They can't put their kids through college or the system screwed me, even though it didn't. The system was designed for them to succeed. They just chose not to take the steps over their lifetime to do it.
Well, you touched on the budgeting piece, but what is a zero-based monthly budget and how does someone create one?
Yep. So a zero base or an every dollar budget is really, in my opinion, the only way to do a budget, right? Most people do what I call budget template syndrome, if they even do that anymore. They put some stuff down on a piece of paper and scratch their heads and wonder why it didn't add up. And I always tell people, if you're using Excel or a piece of paper to do your budget, you are not budgeting. You look at the end of the month and you're like, I thought we were going to spend this, but we spent that. And so an every dollar budget is planning your budget before the month begins, tracking it throughout the month, and actually doing a follow-up. And we don't teach budgets like that anymore. I teach budgets like a SWAT raid or for the fire department, a plan to attack a fire, right? A SWAT officer, that team, before they leave to do that SWAT raid, they do an ops plan. On the fire side, every fire department has an operational plan for if we get dispatched to a one alarm, a two alarm, a three alarm, what's the plan, right? Well, I use the SWAT team analogy. Where are we going? what's the nearest hospital? Who's my dispatcher? What's my stack order? Who's breaching? Same thing for the fire. They do the same thing. Now, that's what doing an every dollar budget is before the month begins. What do we think we're going to spend? And the most important thing that the fire department and the police department does is not the SWAT raid or the fire. It's what they do afterwards. They go back and they debrief and do a formal after action. Did everything we think was going to happen go according to plan, or do we need to make it more efficient down the road? Because just like no two fires are the same, no two monthly budgets are the same, right? We're in May. May of 2023 is not the same budget as May of 2022. And that's all a budget is. It's doing your ops plan before the month begins. It's debriefing throughout the month, and it's doing a formal after action at the end of the month to make sure that everything go according to plan. And in the beginning, you're going to do a lot of debriefs. Why? Because this is a skill. Now, I mean, me and my wife, Carrie, have been budgeting religiously for over 16 years. We don't hardly debrief at all during the month. It's so automatic. We have a couple times we will occasionally, but it takes us such little time to do our budget because it's become such an automatic skill. So it's just like working out in the beginning. It's tough. You can't run a mile. You can walk and then start running. But eventually you run a mile and you're like, that was nothing. It's the same skill set with budgeting.
You know, I had another thought. I'm listening to you talk and just thinking, you know, I think finances and financials, numbers, things like that are intimidating sometimes to people in our culture. And we choose people professions because we're not numbers folks in a lot of cases. But what you just said was such a no-brainer. Applying the procedures that we already use every day in the world and on the road, I mean, it's like, keep it simple, stupid, right? That was such a simple way, but I think every first responder could resonate with what you just said.
That's how we built our program, is we stupefied it. And I always tell people, we didn't stupefy it because I'm stupid. We stupefied it because this is how I learned, right? You know, when I teach about the stock market, I have pictures of my son standing next to roller coaster rides. That's how you understand this stuff. You know, we don't do, you know, Dave Ramsey has the 7 baby steps. We have our program that we call the 8 phases of financial training, right? Every single one of us is familiar with field training. You can't go to phase 2 before you get through phase 1. Right. And occasionally when we are going through training, we struggle and we have to step out of training and go to remedial. In the financial world, as you're working through your phases of financial training, sometimes your water heater goes out. Welcome to life. We step out of the plan, we go to remedial, we fix the water heater, and we step right back into where we were. That's life. And that's really one of the things I really have enjoyed the most about the program that we've created over the years is we've just always joking, you know, me being a cop, I always say, I've just copified this stuff.
And you started mentioning how you debrief with your spouse, Nick, and in general, how can first responders do a better job communicating with their spouses about money and finances and including them in the planning process?
Yep. Yeah, this is a tough one. This is the most common question I get asked from my spouses is, Nick, when I talk to my spouse, how do I talk to him? Because every time I do it, it's a fight. And I always tell them it's a fight because of how you're talking to your spouse. Some of it is inherently trained in us. I mean, if you think about it, our job as first responders, especially on the patrol side of cops and your line level fire, our job is to answer the call for service, get there as safely as possible, listen just enough to put a Band-Aid and leave and hope we don't have to come back before shift change. That's what we do all day long, right? And then we get home and we do the same thing. We triage our family's life. Okay, I've had a bad day. I'm tired. It's been a long 48 hours. Oh man, she wants to talk. How do I listen just enough to triage this and hope I don't have to talk again until tomorrow?
We all do that.
It's about learning your languages. In law enforcement, one of my favorite classes that I've ever participated in is a class called verbal judo. Your mouth will talk you out of more fights than your fist will. It's about de-escalation, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always talk about how we can use our verbal judo skills at home with our spouse as well. We all have different kind of languages. My name's Nick. I'm a nerd. I love budgeting. My wife, Carrie, is a free spirit. The budget might as well be a four-letter word, right? Now, on the flip side, I may be the nerd, but I'm the save or the spender. I like to buy toys. Carrie is my natural saver, and we have to figure out how that works together and mesh together. Mm-hmm. So as the spender sometimes, and I'm sorry, as the nerd, I can see her spend money and come across too aggressively going, why did you buy that? Now, I'll give you a good example. Amazon. Amazon can be anything, right? It can be clothes. It can be dog food. It can be who knows what's in the Amazon box. So if I come home tonight and Carrie's got a bunch of stuff in the living room with Amazon boxes attached to them, I got a couple ways I can respond. I can walk in and go, what the heck you buy on Amazon now? Right? She's already on her heels. What do you mean? What did I buy on Amazon? I'm an adult. I'll buy whatever I want to buy on Amazon. Or I can use my verbal judo skills and I can go, hey, I see you got some stuff from Amazon. What category in the budget do you want me to put it in? Now, she knows I'm a natural tracker, and so I'm not questioning the spending. I'm questioning, hey, where do I put it? And, okay, I got some clothes for the kids. Okay, cool. I'll go put it in the clothing budget. Now, if I go to the clothing budget and we thought we were going to spend about $150 this month and she just dropped $250, once again, I got a choice. Walk back in that living room and go, what is wrong with you? We said $150 and you just dropped $250, right? The gloves are already on. The fight's about to happen. Right. Or I can come back and I can say, hey, Carrie, what we thought we were going to spend on clothes for the kids this month was about $150. What we have spent, we're sitting at about $250. Can you come help me fix this? Maybe do we want to pull like $100 out of the restaurant budget? Maybe roll it over to next month? You know, it's, you know, key words I said there. We, right? We earn them together. We plan them together. We spend it together. And you want to stop money fights in America? If you're married and you're watching this, you might not agree with my opinion that I'm about to say, but you are both chiefs of your department. There's not an assistant chief in this relationship. We earn it together. We plan it together. We spend it together.
Mm-hmm. Well, just for the record, I don't know anything about Amazon boxes.
Famous last word.
So I wanted to go into another topic, which is that of wills and estate planning. Can you talk about how that really applies to first responders in your point of view?
Yeah, I hate this section. I hate it because we shouldn't even have to talk about it. I mean, we deal with death all the time. You know, we go to the calls, we see the drama with it. And the reality is I don't have anything to back up this statistic, but I'd be willing to bet about 80% of the people that watch this don't have a will. And we have the resources to get that. You know, a lot of, you know, on the police side, some police associations give wills for free. There's associations out there. There's a group called willsforheroes.org that has chapters across the country where state attorneys will provide wills. They're not as big as they used to be, but there's still some out there. But we don't do a will. And all that does is it gives us issues if we die. And, you know, within a will, you're going to decide who gets your property, who gets your cars, your guns, your boats, your jet skis, all that kind of stuff. You're going to have an executor of your will, usually somebody that is going to dictate how your wishes want to be settled. And I always tell people, if you don't have a will, I hope you have a really good relationship with your crazy sister or brother, because that may be who takes care of your will. Same thing for the kids. If you don't have a will, who's going to raise your children? I hope you like your crazy aunt and uncle. We all have one or two, right? That may be who raises your children. And so, you know, obviously I'm not an estate attorney, so I always tell people, you know, consult with a good estate attorney. But when it comes to the will and estate planning process, it is so integral to the financial planning process. And we recommend everybody reach out to a good estate attorney or somebody that you trust that know that can help you with this. And you've got to get a will yesterday.
Yeah, I wanted to also circle back to debt, which you mentioned earlier with the example about your $80,000 car stereo system. So how can first responders navigate debt in their financial world? And then, you know, what are some of the types of debt and how do they impact our ability to build financial strength?
Yeah, so I'm one of those weird people that believes there's only one kind of a debt that's positive, and that's called a paid-for debt. I just don't believe in debt. It's not because of my Dave Ramsey days. It's because of my study in millionaires. I mean, I've been through the gurus that say you should leverage debt to your eyeballs to become wealthy. But when you study millionaires as extensively as we have, you find there's a very big characteristic of millionaires. They don't have debt. And I get all the time, well, yeah, that's because they're millionaires. Well, that's interesting because 98% of them came from the middle and lower class. You know, 85% of millionaires are first generation rich. You know, 79% never received a dime of inheritance in their entire life. And here's the fun one. And by the way, I'm quoting all these stats from a book called Everyday Millionaires by Chris Hogan, where he surveyed 11,000 millionaires. And of the 11,000 millionaires surveyed, a third of them never earned $100,000 in any one given year of their entire life, yet they became millionaires. I mean, the third most common career was teacher. So don't tell me you can't do it. It just takes discipline with that. And so when it comes to debt, you know, the first thing we've got to recognize when it comes to debt, it's really hard to lose weight in America with a tub of ice cream in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And if you're like me, it's going to get eaten. It's really hard to become debt free if you're continuing to build on your debt level. And so I had to get rid of my credit cards. I had to cut them up. I look back now at that time period and I had to get rid of my credit cards because credit cards were a toy and I had to reprogram my brain to make me realize that they're a tool. I do have a credit card now. I pay it off every Friday. It's a tool in that aspect. But it's also hard to lose weight in America because you work your butt off and you look in the mirror 2 weeks later and it doesn't look like you lost a lot of weight, right? We don't have that psychological boost with that. And so I'm a big fan of a program called the Debt Snowball, where you list all of your debts from smallest to largest, everything but the house. I don't care about interest. All I care about are the balances. And I'm going to tackle my smallest balance. I'm not going to pay anything extra on anything but that smallest balance until I pay that off. And then I'm going to go up to my refrigerator with a big old flat black Sharpie marker, and I'm going to put a big old fat black line through that because I kept my debt snowball on my refrigerator. Psychologically, you just had a win. Every time you walk by that refrigerator, you get to see that you lost a little bit of weight. Mm-hmm. And if that smallest payment was $50 that you just eliminated, we're going to roll that 50 into the next debt and we're going to build that snowball. We're going to start to build some momentum. And one of the things that we have in first responder land that the civilian world does not, we have the ability to take what gets us in trouble, working too much overtime and part-time jobs, into something that accelerates the plan. You know, people ask, how did you pay that off so quickly? I didn't have to go deliver pizzas. I just signed up for a bunch of overtime. Mm-hmm. And then I use that to help accelerate things to start to pay things down. And every time you pay off a debt, you become that much more financially stable as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've freed up $600 in monthly payments and your water heater goes out, welcome to remedial training, tap the brakes, step out of your snowball, use that $600. And then we also preach before the tackling your debt to have a $2,000 baby emergency fund. Now use that to fix your water heater. Now we're going to use that $600 plus overtime to replenish the emergency fund and then go back into the debt snowball. And it starts to build momentum and you start to see the wins picking up quicker and quicker and quicker.
When you retire, you're just another employee that's gone. In 10 years, you'll be, oh, yeah, that's good old what's his name.
And sometimes I think for a lot of us, it's scary to retire when you've been raised by an organization for almost three decades.
There's a running joke that says that as you retire, you're forgotten about before you even leave the parking lot.
It wasn't that I was losing the passion for the job. I decided I want to go ahead and transition and start traveling and talking to groups of people.
I lost who I was. I didn't have any plans for the future. I sunk.
And we're always saving for a rainy day. And what ends up happening is you die and you never receive the benefit of you working so hard for so long.
It's as if you've lost a loved one. For me, there's a sadness there.
They really do become your second family.
I was a firefighter. That was always what I wanted to do. Sometimes life throws you a curveball and you find yourself without an identity.
I would pass police cars and it was like somebody punched me in the stomach. Like I got sick because I missed it so bad.
When you say I'm a retired firefighter, people, they notice. And they're like, wow, man, that's incredible. And it provides an avenue for you to be impactful.
Now, generally speaking, leasing or purchasing a car outright?
Purchase all day long, used cars only. Leasing is the single most expensive way to drive a car in America. That was a program designed to take a car they don't make jack on, a brand new car, and double and triple their profit. It's 80% of millionaires have never leased a car in their life. Matter of fact, the average millionaire has never bought a brand new car. They buy a used 4-year-old car with 41,000 miles on it. Why? Because of depreciation. A brand new car in America right now costs about $50,000. The minute you sign the paperwork to drive that off the lot, you just lost $5,000, just like that. Right. Now, if you woke up this morning and you saw that your bank was missing $5,000, where would you be right now? At the bank. But yet we do it with a car and we don't even think about it, right? It's the same kind of mentality. I always preach that car payments are the number one reason in America why we don't become millionaires. And, you know, some crazy statistics. In the first quarter of this year, over 15% of the new cars bought in America came with a payment of over $1,000. 5% of the new loans in America for cars in the first quarter came with a payment of over $1,500. It's crazy. When I do crisis coaching for first responders in financial crisis, the car is usually the number one thing that has to go, and it's the toughest thing to get rid of because emotionally we love our cars.
Are you sure it's not cars to go?
I mean, I'm a car guy. I love cars. I mean, I went from a $21,000 car stereo system to a brand new Mach 1 Mustang to leasing a fully loaded Acura TL. I've done stupid on steroids. I got the T-shirt. Now, I will say, fast forward, I drive an Acura now. I drive the same Acura I had to get rid of back in the day to become debt-free. But the difference is I wrote a check for it. Not because I'm wealthy, but because I haven't had a car payment in over 16 years, but I have a car payment every month. If you're used to making a $500 car payment, you take that $500 and you put it in a car replacement savings account. And when it's time to go buy a car, you write a check for it.
Right. I love it. So practical.
Yep.
So when you're thinking about pensions, and what are some of the key terminologies to look out for with pensions?
I love pensions. I hate pensions. I have a love-hate relationship with them. I love pensions because most of us have them and they're great. It's a guaranteed paycheck for the rest of your life. I hate pensions because the reality is your pension going to be enough to retire on? And the reality for most of us is it's not. And by the time we recognize that the pension's not enough, we've lost our most valuable asset, time. And so when it comes to your pension, I always tell people you need to become an expert on your pension. You know, in Texas, I would consider myself a subject matter expert on all of our pensions. That doesn't mean you trust me. You must, as Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. Right? You've got to become an expert. It's too big of a decision not to know. And so find somebody that knows a lot about the pensions and then call your pension companies, go to their seminars, learn about the pension to figure out what helps you best. Now, in the pension world, most pensions have several options, whether it's a lump sum or no lump sum. Is it advantageous to take the lump sum or not take the lump sum? Again, that's very state specific to each pension system. After that, there's general terms. You know, the most common terms you're going to see is something like retiree life only or single option annuity. Anytime you see those typically mean you get paid for the rest of your life as the retiree, and upon your death, your spouse or nobody gets anything. The other common terms are survivorship options. A lot of times you'll see options like a 50 or a 75 or 100% survivorship. That just means that if you die as the first responder, in most situations, that means your spouse is going to get 100% of the check or 75 or 50. And then there's guaranteed options, whether it's a 5, a 10, or a 15-year guaranteed terms. Those options typically start the day you retire. And at the end of the 10-year term, if you die, your beneficiaries get, you know, nothing at that point. Again, that's very general specific. You know, please check with your state to see what your terminology is and what your different rules are. But those are the general guidelines of what the pensions, you know, the terminology that you'll see. The biggest thing I want people to take away when it comes to the pension is the pension's usually not enough. We've got to look at other types of retirement accounts just in case.
Yeah, I can base this on my own personal experience, having waited to like the 11th hour to figure out what I was doing with my pension options. You know, I just didn't really want to know, right? But how early would you say people should start getting proactive about learning about pensions, making some preliminary decisions, and coming up with a plan that's going to see them through the retirement?
When we teach academy classes, I tell them that after they leave, they need to go to their pension company's website, sign up for an account, and start running estimates for what it looks like in 20, 25, and 30 years. I don't care if it's 20 or 25 or 30 years. It's not about the 30 years out. It's about starting to familiarize yourself with the websites, familiarizing yourself with what those estimates look like, familiarizing yourself with the terminology of your pension, and you need to start learning about it. You know, if you have a word in a pension that you don't understand, like a 100% survivorship with pop-up, that should invoke your curiosity. Go, what the heck does a pop-up mean? And start learning about that. Why? Doesn't matter if you got 30 years, that's part of your plan. You need to start to understand what that is. So the short of your answer is the day you get hired. And you need to be looking at your estimates at least once a year minimum, just to keep looking, because they change. And as you get closer, you need to start getting more and more looking at the different numbers and the differences of what it does. Do I retire after my birthday, the first of the year, my anniversary? Mm-hmm. What are the advantages of each day to start to narrow down into your window? Mm-hmm.
This question is a little more specific to EMS, because a lot of standalone EMS agencies or hospital-based agencies do not really offer pension plans. Yeah. So you're really on your own to figure out what to do. Do you have any specific advice for those folks? Because that is one that I hear a lot, especially from EMS people who feel that they just cannot retire.
They can. They just chose not to learn about the options available to them. And so you typically in the retirement world for employers have three different types of accounts. 401ks, which are typically designed for corporations, although some big cities and states have 401ks. You have 457s, which are called deferred comps. You're deferring your compensation now so you can take it later. Those are usually for municipalities. And then you have what are called 403B accounts, which are typically for nonprofits, your hospitals, your schools, those kinds of things. Don't get confused by the numbers. All those numbers mean is if you want to learn more about your 403B plan, go to section 403 subsection B of the Internal Revenue Code, just reference to the IRS code. And so what I hate to see is I hate to see first responders go, I don't have a pension, so I'm screwed. Well, no, you have potentially, you may have a 403B plan at your department, which means you can contribute to retirement. And so you're not screwed, because those cops and firefighters are having 7-10% taken out of their check. You just have to manually go do it. Mm-hmm. It's the same stuff. But again, the more we look at it and go, I'm screwed, the more the clock starts ticking. And the less you start to get to take advantage of compound interest in that. So learn about your different retirement accounts within there. Find out what your options are. Do you have a match? Do you not have a match? Go to HR, start to look at those. Start to look at what the options are within that as well.
If I can share my experience and help just one person, or help one person help somebody else, that's what it's all about.
We're trying to break down the stigma. We're trying to share that there are great, effective resources out there.
Vulnerability is a strength. It's not a weakness.
What I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else.
And as police officers, we always want to go in, see problem, fix problem. And you can't do that with a mental health crisis. You have to see person and connect with person.
This sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace this suck. You know, I don't like these cards, but these are the cards that I've been dealt, and I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability, and I've been trying to do that for the last 10 years.
We've covered a lot, and just wanted to check and see if there's anything that we haven't mentioned that you wanted to say before we close up.
You know, you're going to – so first and foremost, when it comes to money, one of my favorite quotes, I'm going to give you a couple quotes. The first quote is, no excuses. It doesn't matter where you've been. It only matters where you're going. We've all done stupid on steroids when it comes to money. We can't dwell on the path. You know, I know a 19-year-old kid that dropped $21,000 on a stereo system. Lord knows what that had been had I invested it. I can dwell on that, or I can say, you know what? That's life. We live and learn. But the next quote is from Henry Ford, and it's, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're 100% correct. You have to believe you can win with money. This system in America is not rigged so that the little man can't get ahead. Mm-hmm. It is specifically designed that if you want to become successful, you want to win with money or anything in your life, you have the opportunity to do it if you're willing to have the discipline and the work ethic to do it. And the last quote I leave you with is, all too often I do conferences, I teach classes, I do these podcasts, and someone watches this and they get done with the podcast and they have all this enthusiasm, which I hate. I hate enthusiasm. I mean, if you think about it, what does enthusiasm turn into by tomorrow?
Yeah, apathy.
Yeah, enthusiasm is very common. If you want to start to win with life, take your enthusiasm, which is common, and turn it into endurance, because endurance is rare. There's resources out there, whether you go to financialcop.com or you've got somebody locally that can help you with this stuff. There's a ton of resources out there to be able to start to take a topic that seems complex, that's really not. We just got to take the time to learn it.
Excellent. Nick, where can people find you out there? Any courses, classes, or other offerings that you have going on?
Yep. So financialcop.com is where we have everything, whether it's financial planning or advising related, whether you want to learn about life insurance. We have our resource section on there that has all the different topics we talk about with blogs, those kinds of things. We actually have a complete virtual Financial Cop Academy that you can sign up for on the website. It's got my original 4-hour class that we're actually about to reproduce. Within the next 6 months, we'll be adding additional classes. We're going to be adding budget workshops, debt reduction workshops, retirement seminars. My favorite class we're going to do that's actually going to be part of the academy, but also free for all first responders, is we're building a premarital financial coaching class for first responders. If I can save one marriage in this country, it's worth every penny I'm going to spend on that class alone.
Wow.
Yep. Anybody that goes through the virtual Financial Cop Academy gets access for 12 full months to repeat it as many times as they want to. They can go through it with their spouse. And any new materials we add to that academy is instantly accessible to them at no additional cost.
That's great. Thank you so much, Nick. This has really been great.
Yep. Honored to be able to again pass this information on to our brothers and sisters.
If you ever have the opportunity to see Nick speak live, don't miss it, because it's unparalleled. Nick, thank you so much for everything you're doing, all the information you just shared with us, and keep on doing all that great work for financial planning.
Thank you. Honored to be able to do it.
Please like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV. And we're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, respondertv.com, for all the past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Advisory services offered through Retirement Plan Advisors, LLC, a federally registered investment advisor. RPA and Financial Cop, LLC are not affiliated.